broadcasting worldwide from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. It certainly is beautiful, and it certainly is One Radio Network, and it is certainly Thursday, April 22nd, Earth Day, 2010. Happy birthday to Mother Earth. Did you get her anything? This is Pat... Well, I forgot. This is Patrick Timpone, and OneRadioNetwork.com. We're live every morning, 10 a.m. It's an honor to be here with you. Tomorrow, Open Phone Friday. It's going to be a good one, so stay right there. Next week, we have some pretty cool people lined up that I'll tell you about as we move along here this morning. Here's our phone number, and you'll need this number, 888-663-6386. Emails patrick@oneradionetwork.com. patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We're going to move out to Nevada City, California, and pick up on part two of a conversation we've been having, or are having, whatever the case may be, with Dr. Harvey Beagleson, B-I-G-E-L-S-E-N. His website is drbeagleson.com. Doc Beagleson was on the founding board of the American Holistic Medical Association, ophthalmologist way back in 71. Been doing some very, very interesting things along his career, politically active. He has a book called Doctors Are More Harmful Than Germs, so you can tell he's a feisty one. And he's really into live blood analysis in a whole different way that many people really don't do around the country, and I'll find out more about that. We were introduced to Dr. Beagleson by David Icke, so you know that he's out there on the edge. Are you out on the edge, Dr. Beagleson, in Nevada City, California?
Oh, yeah, always. Nevada City is an interesting city that they accept it, but I've always lived on the edge. It's more fun that way. Maybe a little shaky, but I'm always looking for something.
Yeah, well, shaky ground, you're in a good spot in California. I mean, it happens all the time.
Yes.
And how did you become in contact with David Icke, who's a regular on our program?
I met him through Gina and Conscious Media Network.
Ah.
And he's pretty close, and he's done a lot of shows. And then he actually came to me, and we did his blood.
Oh, you did his blood?
Yep, we analyzed him, and we've helped him out somewhat.
Uh-huh. And you found out he wasn't a reptile?
No, he's not.
Well, that's good to know.
Sometimes he may try to, you know, do things and make things like that, but no, he's not. He was a fascinating guy.
He's a real human. Well, I know he is. Well, Dr. Beagleson, this whole thing of live blood analysis, and we sent you Patrick's blood, and for those of you who would like to follow along the bouncing ball this morning, you can just simply click on the headline there, and it says, View Patrick's Blood Analysis. And you can see the pictures that we're going to talk about. Now, keep in mind that my health and my blood is certainly not any more important than yours is, so that's not the reason we're doing it. The reason we're doing it is because this will give you a fascinating look at how this works, why this works, perhaps, and perhaps you might even want to do it yourself by going to drbeagleson.com. Because I suppose then, just like you're doing with me, Dr. Beagleson, you can work with people, I guess, all over the world.
As long as I can get the blood, usually within 36 hours, and most people, the blood even lives longer, but their images in the blood, as we'll see, I can do them all over the world. I've had them from Australia, I've had them from Eastern Europe and stuff, and we can analyze that.
Pretty fascinating. Now, I was curious about what we would have done if after you saw my blood, like I was going to die within a week or so. Would you have just told me on the air?
that's a pretty intense one. But no, we first of all knew you weren't, because you know you can hear yourself that you're not going to die in a week. You know, there's a lot of life to you. But the blood. The first thing I learned is the blood matches the patient. If someone's going to die in a week, you'll see them walk into the room or lie in the room. You know, you'll know it. And if their blood collapses fast, it gets pretty obvious. But no, I knew you were not going to have major problems.
Now, if I were, say I was a patient and there were some really strange things like cancer we didn't know about, I suspect then that would show up.
Well, what would show up is tendencies, okay? There's early lesions that can show up, but you got to really interpret them. A lot of stuff, which shows up on you, frankly, we die three different ways. We die from circulation, we die from cancer, which is a mold, or we die from arthritis, our body gets so hard and nothing can run through us and we die that way. You're frankly heading into the arthritis zone. You got ways to go. But I can tell from your blood you're not heading into the cancer zone.
Okay, now when you say look on, what picture shows where if I don't make some kind of changes, I could get some arthritic things?
Actually, I don't have that one picture. It's the one picture I thought about. There was a separate picture of just the blood. And as the way the blood weakens, you can tell whether it's going to weaken into and dies off, whether it's going to die off into an arthritic or a type of cancer mold type of thing. And yours, and I thought about it late last night, I should have sent that picture of the blood. And you can see in picture one, you see that there's a picture of a vertebrae in the first picture of your back.
Okay, the first picture is the back. And folks, once again, all you have to do is just click on the front page of Dr. Beagleson's, or just below the play button there, and you'll see a little link where it says pictures of Patrick's blood. So Patrick's back, we're looking at that, yeah.
Now the cells around that are a little spiky. There's little spikes in them. And those little spikes, when they're sharp little spikes like that, that tells me you're more heading into the arthritic zone.
Okay? Now,
that's years of working on that.
Oh, pardon me?
That's years of understanding that and being taught that. But that's where you're heading into. Cancer doesn't look like it's in your life.
So when you say heading into the arthritic zone, do we know why that could be and what I would need to change?
There's a few things. First of all, the only perfectly efficient body to me would be the Messiah. Everyone's got blockages.
Everybody's got energy blockages that we're going to talk about this morning.
Yeah, something blockages. For you to improve certain things, there's breathing that needs to be improved on you, which really starts from birth. But that's the big one, frankly. You get that breathing starting to improve, and a lot will move up on you. You're not a dirty blood. You can detox from now to the moon, and it's not going to really help you.
Why is the breathing connected with possible arthritic conditions?
Well, it's not the breathing connected as much as the breathing. We live by oxygen. You can fast for a week. But the better breath you have, the less chance the body will work more efficiently. And what happens with arthritis, you're working on 7 out of 8 cylinders, 6 cylinders, and a couple of those, you're not completely cleaning up, and those things go into joints slowly over the years.
The lack of oxygen.
That's the lack of oxygen is such a key to everything. It's just not oxygen, but then the body, the channels of movement of energy through the body, as long as they're open, straight, and moving, and we have good oxygen, we should live 120 years. We work like crazy to kill ourselves off at 80.
I see. Okay, we work real hard just to leave at 80.
Right, right.
So what you're saying is that all of us pick something to do that. You know, in other words, pick something, either cancer, arthritis, or something, because of as you say, not the Messiah or whatever, you know, not living a perfect life. So the body chooses some way to get out of here early.
Right, well, and what it is, not getting out of here early, the body becomes inefficient. So instead of getting 25 miles to the gallon, you start to get 20 miles to the gallon, like 15.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes inefficient and eventually runs down. It's got a limit, but like I said, its limit should be up to about 120 years if we took care of it right.
Right. Now, let's talk about these energy blockages, because we touched on it the first show, and you talked to me a little bit about it when we had a conversation a few days ago. Energy blockage. So your contention, Dr. Beagleson, is that if the energy, the prana, the chi continues to move around the body, then you get the oxygen in the blood and everything works right?
You should do healthy. You should be healthy, plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, health is when it's not getting there the way it should. The one reason the energy, the chi is not getting there, that type of thing, the circulation's not getting there, then the tissue starts to weaken. Okay, that's the key. To me, the greatest American physician was the founder of osteopathy, Andrew Taylor Still, who stated disease cannot exist where there are no obstructions. We have all of these flows that go through the body, and if we have an obstruction, you got a stagnant pond, and in the stagnant pond, all the garbage happens.
Wow. You had recommended that I find an osteopath, and I did find one, a Dr. Jim Davis, really neat guy in Austin, and I went to see him Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And
good.
He did a session, and it was really fascinating. because he actually worked on the pump there at the base of the spine.
Yes.
And after about 20 minutes or so, you would not believe what was going on with my digestion. It was like, I was just like, my whole stomach and intestines were working where they weren't working when I walked into his office as well.
And really was very interesting, because what he did with you too, because, and that's classical osteopathy, I'm glad you like that, but part of what I'm seeing in your picture that I saw, because of the birth process, you had a problem in the birth process which gave the strabismus, but it's also, you didn't get a good breath, and when I have the kidney and the lung there, your abdomen was compressed a little bit.
Oh,
okay.
So where
so
are you seeing?
It is uncompressed, especially there's a diaphragm in the pelvis. When he started to work on that tailbone, he started to loosen the pelvis up and get that moving.
And where do you see that in the blood?
Well, what I have in the blood is part of the history. What I have in your blood, but I go down to the umbilical cord.
Okay.
Area.
Scroll down to the umbilical cord. Okay.
Now,
well, that looks pretty beautiful.
Yeah, that's like everything is congested. And what happened, okay, the umbilical, when the animal gives birth, it eats the placenta and leaves the whole cord.
Mm-hmm.
Well, us humans, we're nice, and we do it real neat, so when a woman gives birth, we keep it nice and tight, and we give it to mommy that way instead of a long cord hanging out. However, that umbilical, that belly button is tied up to the diaphragm. Scars are always contracting. If you too tie it too tight, you cannot get a full deep breath.
Wow.
And it pulls down, and there's a diaphragm in the pelvis. So it pulls that whole abdomen is probably tightened up a little too tight. Okay, if I treated you with what's called neurotherapy, we treat the belly button and loosen up the diaphragm, and that would do good things for you. And the osteopath wanted the tailbone, which he loosened up the pelvis. So I'll bet today that your whole abdominal area is actually wider, more extended, more open, more, and that's why the intestines move better.
And he did work on some of those trigger points in the abdomen, but now you said neurotherapy, which is something, did you learn from Dietrich Klinghardt, and you use Procaine, and tell us about that.
Well, Dietrich and I have been friends for 25 years. He came in about 25 years ago from Germany doing neurotherapy. About the same time, I had two teachers that were teaching me that. So we became friends. I learned it from two German physicians, not from Dietrich.
Mm-hmm.
What neurotherapy is you find the areas, and the biggest blocks in an area is a scar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's like a dam. And classically, you use Procaine on it, which actually is not only an anesthetic, but it breaks down to 2B vitamins, which help open up the circulation. I also use other remedies to help heal the inflammation there, help loosen the scar. I use other what's called isopathic remedies. But
isopathic?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're a little difficult to explain. They're German remedies. They're live germs, but I use those in my neurotherapy. But the key in the neurotherapy is loosening up those scars, loosening up the blocks.
Mm.
And that's been around. Actually, the first neurotherapy was in 1925.
And the Procaine does that, and also some homeopathics that you have.
Right. And not only that now, for example, if you have a problem in the back, and we would treat along the nerve roots in the spine because the nerves supply the tissue. Then I would do some osteopathic manipulation just like you had. And that combination of the two really opens up the system. And now the nerve supply can get to the tissue, and the tissue can really work the way it should.
Now, how does Procaine allow the energy in the scar to move and to get through?
Well, Procaine, first of all, was synthesized in 1905 from 2B vitamins. Para-aminobenzoic acid and the other one, diethylamine ethanol, which is actually a precursor to our moods and our energy system in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you inject Procaine, it breaks down within minutes in those two ingredients. First, it's an anesthetic. Now, when you take the pressure off and you give a mood elevator, the circulation opens up, and the PABA, the pyrimine benzoic acid, that actually stimulates regeneration. So when you're injecting Procaine, you're not just using an anesthetic. You're opening up circulation, and you're stimulating regeneration. Now, today we have the Novocaines, the Lidocaines, the Xylocaines. They're all liver toxic to some degree. Protein is not.
I see.
It breaks down this way.
Now, so you're suggesting when you look at my picture of the umbilical cord, that the doc, instead of just, they just cut the umbilical cord too tight, and that, and you were, you're very correct. I've never felt like I've been able to really take a full 100% deep breath from my diaphragm, even though I learned how to breathe deep down because of being in radio.
Right.
But I've never, even doing yoga, I've never felt like I've been able to do like 100%.
Well, now you get the neurotherapy. Had me. You, people walk out when I do that, and I hit the belly button, and then we work on the diaphragm, and then we do the manipulation. They walk out, and they're like 10% breathing better. They're looking at the front of the office and say, "Am I really breathing that much better and deeper?" Yes, you are.
And it's long lasting.
Yes, it is. Yes, and scars are always contracting, so you got to sometimes treat that belly button every 3 months to a year, depending on how much. And the patient starts to know, "I'm not getting where I should be. Let's retreat it again." The whole treatment takes about 3 to 5 seconds, too.
Hmm. And are there different parts around the umbilical cord, or is it just one scar?
It's one scar in there. And there's a traction line. There's a way that we feel the traction line. It may be going up to the right quadrant, left quadrant, but there's a way we can trace the scar, and we inject it along the traction line in the umbilical area, and almost, you get an immediate release.
This doc kind of nosed around in there with trigger points, and he suggested that it was about 3 o'clock on me on a clock.
Yeah, and that could be pulling. It's very easy at 3 o'clock because you have one kidney, okay, that's got a problem, and that would be almost about the 3 o'clock area on that. So you may have that area pulled down tighter. Probably if you had your shirt off and you looked at your chest, you'd see one breast higher than the other, one rib cage a little lower than the other, too.
So that spot on trigger point around 3 o'clock on my belly is also affecting the left kidney?
It's probably affecting the kidney. It's probably pulling in a direction that's affecting the kidney.
So it kind of pulls on the kidney a little bit?
And what there's traction lines. The whole body is actually expanding and tracting about 8 to 10 times a minute. The tailbone moves about a millimeter. This is cranial sacral osteopathy.
Mm-hmm.
The meningeal membranes move about a millimeter 8 to 10 times a minute. And every time we swallow, our tongue seals our teeth off, and we form a vacuum, which actually pulls the cerebral spinal fluid up into the skull.
Wow.
The skull is 22 bones that expand as the fluid gets up in there. Pressure comes too great and it contracts. We get this whole hydraulic pumping system and fluid going up and down the body that way. If you have a scar or a traction line, well, that's blocking something and it's going to set up a stagnation and stuff like that. Your traction line with the kidney is very interesting because the kidney works like a flour sifter. As we walk and talk, it shakes and the debris comes out. Yours, with the traction line pulling on the kidney's not moving. It tends to back up, and that's why your kidney lab tests are slightly off.
So you can see that by looking at the picture of Patrick's kidney, about the third one down.
You'll see it's, the color is very dense, which means nothing, no chi is getting through it, not much. There's some green spots in there, which also means that some things that are getting through, those tissues are very hypoglycemic.
Wow. Now, what would be, you see a white blob there with some green spots, as you said, on Patrick's kidney on the page. What would be the ideal color?
Well, number one, you shouldn't see the kidney there.
Oh, I see. It wouldn't even be there.
Right. What you see in the blood is what the body is concerned about.
Wow. You mean... Wow. You mean that little white thing wouldn't even be there if my kidney was on all 12 cylinders?
Totally. Totally correct.
Isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, now, I'm going to think your heart's not there, your lung is not there, because those are no problems.
I think, don't we have a picture of Patrick's lungs?
What you got, actually, the lung you do, the lung never opened fully.
Oh, and that could be a breathing thing.
That's the breathing thing. It never opened fully there. So the heart wasn't there, because like you don't see that, and there's you know, other things weren't there. But yeah, that lung never opened fully, so Patrick's getting about 80% oxygen.
And this is just years of experience looking at these pictures, knowing what they are?
Yes, and they'll match the anatomy. As you go down further, you can see the tooth implant and the babies and stuff like that. That'll match the anatomy. About 50% of the pictures are so clear it's incredible. The other 50%, what I call, you have to fudge a little bit. There's a picture of you on your brain one.
Yeah,
that's a very fascinating one.
Okay, let's go back. That's the second picture down.
Yep.
Now there's two, looks like there's two white blobs there.
Right, and what you have, so you had strabismus.
What's that?
You had, your eyes were not straight.
That's correct. When I was small, cross-eyed, yeah.
Right. You actually were seeing differently the left brain and the right brain. You can almost switch to either one depending on the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like, if you actually move those two pieces together, it would look like one solid brain, but they're separate.
Hmm.
So actually looking at them separate, yes. It's a defect to be cross-eyed. However, you can switch to right brain and left brain. You can go back and forth because the way your body was set up.
Don't quite understand that.
The left brain is totally your practical brain. If you've got a need to write something,
sure,
it's totally your practical brain. Your right brain's your creative side.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be creative, you just put energy to your right brain and you can become totally creative. If you wanted to put your feet on the ground, you need to do something practical, you can go left brain. Most people have combinations of the two.
So most people have just one picture there?
Yeah, most people, the brain shouldn't be there.
Oh, it shouldn't be. So my picture, I have two pictures, though, so that means I'm brain dead?
No, that just means your two halves are not synced right, not in sync, working right in synchronization. However, if that happened to you when you were 20, you'd have a problem. But being born with it, by the age of 7, the brain locks in and gets adjusted to what happened.
Just try to figure out. Wow.
Right. It's totally adjusted to it. But basically, if you wanted to, like, for example, you got in a meditative state, you can really get into a pure, and your left brain would be out of it.
Hmm.
Okay? If you wanted to really figure out a problem, you can go straight left brain without any strange ideas coming in at you.
I see. So, in broad strokes, then, if someone shows up with a picture of these two brains like this, would a goal be to get it where the blood would not show it at all, or this is just something I'll just kind of...
Yeah, I would. If I had you, there's ways that I would look at you, and I don't have it here, but you had your biggest inflammation, and frankly, there were minor inflammations, but you had a lot of pictures of the eyes that were surgerized, so there's inflammation there.
Oh, when I had eye surgery?
Right.
When I was 5 years old.
Right.
Oh.
Now, the way to straighten out some of the brain, now realize your brain now is really used to it, okay, and is totally happy with the show. It really a lot depends on the roof and the shape of the mouth, which sets the brain. And yours was probably squished at birth. That's why you get enough cross-eyed. But basically, you know, you need the strabismus surgery. If the roof of the mouth, one of the ways to check that, if you put your front teeth the top and against the bottom, those should be totally straight and even, the lines in the center. And yours may be off, and your TMJ, if you put your fingers in your ears, may be off.
Uh-huh, I see.
If those are off, then there's a dentist that can straighten out the top and make those even, and then the brain would be even, more even.
When you say straighten out, make the even, so in other words, no overbite, is that what you mean by...
Not just overbite. It's how it's centralized. The front, top teeth and the bottom teeth have to be aligned perfectly.
Oh, is that proprioception or is that different?
No, proprioception is the way the brain feels it. You know, is it right or left or something like that? No, I'm talking about physically align it. Look in the mirror, put the bottom teeth next to the top teeth, and very few people have the middle of the top and the middle of the bottom lined up exactly.
Oh.
And then if you put your fingers in your ears and you open up your jaw back and forth, and if you don't have any click, great. Very few people have a click. Very few people don't have a click and have that lined up. But that, if you can get a good dentist to line the top of the roof right, that you don't have that click in the ears and everything is straight in the front, that would straighten the brain out.
I see. So is it a matter of fact that the bottom jaw is over to the left or to the right?
No, it doesn't make a difference. That makes a difference if it's over to the left or right. Actually, it'll make a difference in which shoulder is higher and which hip is higher.
Hmm.
That's a whole other ballgame. The brain needs to see everything in a certain way, but if the mouth is tilted, the brain will then use other muscles to keep itself straight. And a lot of times, like I said, you'll see a left shoulder higher than the right shoulder, right hip higher than the left hip, and that all comes from the brain wanting to see things straight.
And what techniques do dentists use to get that right?
Most times, at your age, you know, young people are good orthodontists, but frankly, most orthodontists in the United States don't set it right. I work with dentists that will actually put little rubber dams in there so that, you know, you don't want to mess with something too much. a rubber dam that would straighten the mouth a little bit and sort of exercise your mouth to keep it a certain way. I worked with a couple of dentists to do that. And when the mouth is set right, you breathe much better. The lungs are opened up, the bronchial tubes are opened up, you sleep much better. All of that happens when the mouth's set right. But most of the time, they can put rubber dams in there if a dentist knows what he's doing.
What do you mean, rubber dams that you wear all the time or just some?
Yeah, like I have people that wear the simplest way. Like, I believe in the KISS principle, keep it simple. Okay, and one dentist that I deal with in Berkeley, if you went in there, he would put a rubber dam that you would be wearing most of the time during the day. If you wanted to eat, you'd probably take it out because it was bothering eating. At nighttime, he'd have you sleep with a little different one. It really opens up the breathing, and so you can sleep peacefully. But the one that you'd wear in the daytime would be like slowly exercising your mouth. He would change it over several months to widen itself. He'd put a little here and a little there to widen it and even it, and the brain likes it wide and even.
You're widening the actual...
the opening of the mouth.
The opening of the mouth and the top and the bottom both.
Yep. Wow. I had my dentist in Vancouver. He actually changed my mouth 2 millimeters vertical, widened it five horizontal. And he used to joke at me because I couldn't sing anything. And because he said I had such a fat Adam's apple. When he widened my whole mouth out, I could now move my Adam's apple differently, and I can go up and down the scales.
And how long did it take for him to widen that?
I had a lousy mouth because I was raised by a father that sold chocolate. So I had to have implants. It took him a few years to do that. But someone like, you know, if you have a good mouth and you have basically good teeth, then instead of braces, you take someone your age and you use little rubber dams and stuff like that.
Boy, how do you find it? How do folks listening find a dentist to do that?
Well, okay. Number one, if you check my website, I could try to track to find dentists near you.
Okay.
That would probably be the simplest way. And I can also tell you, if you really need a dentist or just maybe an osteopath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For example, a lot of people that have had tonsil surgery, you may not need the dentist. The tonsil surgery is causing scars and pulling on the mouth in certain ways. Well, we do neurotherapy on the tonsils, we can possibly widen the mouth and the head, and you may not need the dental stuff.
And you can, and actually a good cranial osteopath can actually widen it as well?
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Here's an email from Randall. I was wondering, looking at the pictures of the blood on the website, are the photos touched or changed at all? What causes the illumination of the forms and the images?
That's a very good question. Yeah. I'm not even really sure of that. Which amazes me, okay? I had a couple teachers showed me only one red cell can come out of a capillary at a time. These pictures are much, much larger than the red cells. Now, what I think goes on, it's been proven that blood cells and the arteries are actually like an electrical cable. A red cell is different charge than the white cell. They run on different lines. It's actually electricity sets it up, and that's a work of Nordenstrom in Sweden. What I think may go on is if the body is worried about a liver, the electricity of the liver is there, and when it precipitates out, you can get the form of the liver. But these pictures could not physically be going around the blood because they would clog up the system. But they are there in every single case when they come out.
Hmm. So I guess when you look at someone's blood, you always see something.
Always. The only perfect person will be the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, though, and one teacher showed me, sometimes right before, like a week or two before death, the blood clears. And one of my teachers told me, she says, the spirit has just left.
Oh, yeah, soul has left the body.
Right.
Ah.
And then you won't see all the blood then won't be working on all the problems anymore. And sometimes you're working on a sick patient, all of a sudden the blood clears and you go,
You know, yeah. I suspect, Doc, just for fun, just to brainstorm, philosophize a bit, I suspect that babies leave their body a lot coming back and forth, you know, because they're just not really used to being here. That, you know, they go back and forth. And I think the same thing happens in older age when people are getting ready to leave their body for the last time. You know, before they die, supposedly, whatever you call it, I think they go back and forth a lot and spend a lot of time on the other side.
That may be true. You know, babies, from what I understand, have a 6-month option.
Yeah.
whether they want to stay or not. And that's the sudden death, you know, sudden instant death syndrome. They have a sick, whether they don't like it, out they can pull in 6 months.
That's wild. Dr. Harvey Beagleson is with us. Here's the website. It is drbeagleson, BIGELSEN.com. We're going to take some phone calls and also more emails. And come on in, 888-663-6386. If you just tuned in, you can click on the front page there right above Dr. Beagleson's picture. It says View Patrick's Blood. And then you can look at the pictures while we're talking about it. Pretty wild stuff, huh? We've just initiated a new relationship with a company that I think you're going to really like. It's so exciting because they have a lot of stuff that we like. It's called Renewal Enterprises. And you can look right on the front page of One Radio Network, and they have a lot of cool things here. Very many products that we have used over the years. The Intramax, they have that liquid vitamin from Food Source, which is really cool. They got all of Dr. Marshall's, Bob Marshall's products, Premier Research Labs. They have some nice water filters, DNA repair cream, aluminum-free deodorants, lipsticks, and beauty care products that are free of junky stuff, pet care stuff. Really, really nice products. They have free shipping for orders over 50, and we get a commission on all the things that you buy from Renewal Enterprises. Just click through there every time and to make sure that we get the commission. And that'll help support OneRadioNetwork.com with over about 800 different podcasts that you can listen to and have a whole education on health, wealth, and well-being. So that's our new one on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com. To Patrick now, 888-663-6386, or email patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
Having a good time with Dr. Harvey Beagleson, Dr. Beagleson, B-I-G-E-L-S-E-N. If you'd like to do the whole blood thing, you can just go on the website and he can do that regardless of where you live. It'd be kind of fun. I just think it's fascinating. Look at the pictures right on our website. So let's go back to Patrick's back. That would also kind of coincide with the lung. What does that picture show you?
Yeah, that portion of the back is really the thorax region. There's ways that I can tell it's the thorax different than other regions. And that would have to do with the lungs. So the diaphragm and the chest wall and the lungs, it's looking like a human bellows. Okay, so if your diaphragm is not expanding, contracting completely, that bellows is not working completely, but that's also pulling everything in. So you're getting probably about 80% filling up your bellows. Okay, the osteopath, as they loosen up the diaphragm and straighten the back out, you will start to notice better and better breathing.
And the better breathing really equals a whole lot of different things.
Everything. You're going to find you'll be more focused. Breathing is the way we live. Okay, that's it. And if you can get, I like it running on 70 octane. Most Lyme disease people, it's not the germ, they're running on 70 octane for several reasons. If you get a person running on 90 octane, boy, you got they're running all over the place. That's the difference, and the lungs are the key to that.
So when you mentioned my body, if not really changed it later on, there could be some arthritic issues. Are not arthritic issues also tied in with bacteria and viruses, Doc?
No. You look at the body, the germ theory of disease, and my website will explain it, my books will explain it. The germ theory of disease and viruses and bacteria, all of this came up with Pasteur said germs cause disease. His rival, Antoine Béchamp, said, no, germs live in a diseased body. Now, also Pasteur said a germ never changes. A strep is always a strep. His rival said, no, germs, a strep can become a fungus. It can become a virus. It can become bacteria. It'll change and adapt to the system. Pasteur, on his deathbed, recants and admits he's wrong, that the germ is not the key, the terrain is everything. But what goes on with the germ theory of disease is Rockefeller picks it up in 1910, sponsors the pharmaceutical industry, everything else goes out. So now we're all looking for drugs and germs, and we're really missing that it's the stagnation in the body. The germ is growing in a stagnant part. You know, everything in life changes. Trees change, animals change, everything grows. Well, so does a germ. It can change.
So you're suggesting that all these little buggies are running around in us, and because there's stagnation for many, many different reasons, then they can change and morph into something that can hurt us, like L-form bacteria.
Totally, definitely. That's what goes on. Candida, for example. Okay, what you have with Candida, we have our intestines aligned with billions of bacteria, E. coli is the key one. If you have inflammation someplace, well, the body, to put inflammation out, will hold water. Well, it holds water in all the tissues. All the tissue swells, well, so does the E. coli swell. As it swells, it converts to a Candida.
But inflammation, isn't it caused by bugs?
No, inflammation, biggest cause of inflammation, number one, is anytime you cut the surface of the skin of any cell, will create an inflammation. You scratch yourself, okay, you injure yourself, it will create an inflammation to heal it. The single biggest cause of inflammation today is amazing to me. It's doctors. That's my book, because what is surgery? It's a stabbing with a knife and cutting something out. The inflammation is enormous. Afterwards, they may take your appendix out, but I guarantee you that's going to shorten your life in the long run, because they've damaged this great physical body and created massive inflammation.
Here's an email from Amanda. She is in Los Angeles. I find this fascinating. What about cesarean scars or episiotomies for us ladies? What do we do with those?
You have to find a neurotherapist to treat those. And what happens, the C-section is a major surgery, and that's pulling, it's like a tourniquet, it's really pulling the pelvis tight, and it's creating problems on that. Women's lifespans for the first time in history are coming down because of the procedures that have been done to them, the hormonal stuff that's been done to them. They're taking out women's uteruses after the age of 50, about 50% of women are doing that now.
Oh, my goodness.
That's insanity.
And now the optional cesarean section, so they can schedule the time of their baby, is rampant in this country.
That to me is sickening. Okay?
It's rampant.
Because this C-section is major surgery.
It is major surgery.
And not only that, there's five diaphragms the baby has.
Five?
And there's five. There's one in the pelvis, the one we know about, the throat acts as a diaphragm, and there's two in the brain. Okay, and they should be pumping. There's 22 bones in the skull. When you come through vaginally, those contractions start the body pumping. When you pull it out C-section, these kids come out limp. They'd never get a good first breath.
My God.
Okay, and so it's not healthy for the kids, and it's massively damaging to the mother. An elective C-section for someone's time is barbarism, and any doctor, frankly, should lose his license to something like that.
And we've been told that the passage through the vaginal birth canal is very key for probiotics and good bacteria.
Yeah, coming through the birth canal is the way to do it. That's the way the Creator did it. The Creator wanted to come through the belly, they would put a zipper on the darn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's coming through that way for a reason, okay? And my philosophy is, don't mess with Mother Nature. There's reasons for this to happen that way, and all we can do is help it along the best way possible.
And for listeners now with C-section scars or episiotomies, how do they find someone, because we just got an email from Emily, how does she find someone who can do this neurotherapy?
There are two ways. You can check with me. I can try to find someone in the area.
Okay.
There's the International Academy of Neurotherapy. You can check, but you need two things. Okay, and that you need to do the neurotherapy, and then you need to do the osteopathy to put those hips back in place.
I see.
So the combination, and very few people do the combination. I tell people a lot of times, if you've got a number of things, come to me for a week. I'll open the door. Then I can send you back to your local people who keep on pushing the door open. But if you can't find someone, a lot of times you got to go to two or three different people, because one person doesn't do that procedure.
So we have the International Academy of Neurotherapy, and then
right.
Is there an academy to find a good cranial osteopath?
Osteopathic Cranial Academy.
Well, good. Osteopathic Cranio Academy. And we'll get those links up on our website right above the play button so people can just click on there. So you would do the neurotherapy with the procaine and stuff along with the osteopathic work.
You go from one to the other. If you happen to find someone, you go to a neurotherapist at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 3 o'clock you have an appointment with the osteopath.
Mm-hmm. We've been told over the years that there are some clays that people can put on these scars to help neutralize them. Do you think that's possible?
They will soften them. There are things that can soften them. Okay, my daughter's an acupuncturist. She's got things that will soften them. But basically, scars are—you know—that's the worst thing you can do to the physical body. The injections of the procaine is the best way to go after certain things. There are different herbs and stuff that will soften them. But the best thing is avoid it. First of all, no elective surgery. Things like C-sections, unless it's really mandatory, no elective surgery.
Are you talking about scars, like even if a child cuts himself severely and have to get stitches?
Yeah, but they're more minor than, mm-hmm. for example, someone breaking a bone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because now something's completely out of whack. You mm-hmm. break a bone in your ankle, you find now you're going to limp, which is going to put pressure on your knees, going to put pressure on your hips. So the bigger the scar, the more damage, the more damaging the inflammation. But sometimes we've had people, I have one guy that crushed his toe, and they had to do a toenail transplant. He's actually gained 200 pounds over the years from that. It's so inflammatory, and he's got a type 2 diabetes. And every time we treat that, his blood sugar drops about 20-30%.
An emailer, David is from Cincinnati, and wants to know, can you tell different dietary issues from the blood? In other words, will you see things that they're eating, foods they shouldn't or they should eat more of?
You can see, it's not the dietary issues as much as you can see if they're eating a lot of chemicals, garbage. Mm-hmm. And you can see, like, for example, you have a clean blood,
mm-hmm.
okay? But there's some people that have a lot of garbage. They look foreign, it looks strange in the blood, and when you got something like that, you can see that, and there's ways that you can clean that out of the blood. And my philosophy is, if it's got a label on it, it's in a can, chances are it's not human food.
Mm-hmm. This is from Mary. She is in St. Louis. She wants to get more information from you about this whole idea of Patrick's head being smashed at birth, and how can she prevent that with her baby that she's about to have in the next 3 or 4 weeks?
You're better off with a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because doctors tend to pull it out very fast. When I was being born, the doctor wasn't there, so the nurse held me back.
The nurse did what?
Put her hand in my mother's vagina and held me back in there. Which now, by the time the doctor came in and I was delivered, my left part of my brain was squished. I have a left amblyopic eye. They pressed on the nerve that fed to my stomach, and every time I breastfed, I threw up across the room, so they operated on my stomach.
My God.
So basically, do a midwife first. If you have an osteopath around there, that's great. I have the osteopath work on the woman. She never gets a postpartum depression. You work on the kid. The kid gets 180 IQ, 200 IQ, creative, and you put a do not disturb sign on him till autopsy. That's the best way. If you go into medicine, they got lights on. They may use forceps on that, episiotomies, do all of that. No, you're better off with a midwife. That's the way I would go at it.
So in cases like mine, and I'm sure there's many around the listeners, you know, who were born in the, 50s and 60s, what happens? How is it possible that the head gets smashed up at birth?
Most probably was pulled out with forceps.
Forceps, wow.
Right, right. And when I was a medical student and I did that, it was so much fun. But boy, it was barbaric. And with forceps, my son calls them salad babies.
Salad babies.
It squishes the head.
My God. So you can actually have a cranial osteopath there and work on the baby's head right after birth.
Oh, and the kid will just open up like a flower.
No kidding.
Yeah. Why, if you got to the kid 24, 48 hours later, that osteopath would open up the kid.
Everything is so soft and malleable, and it's easy to get it all back right?
Right, right. It's so easy. It's so easy to get that kid to take that first breath and get that kid really crying and opening up that mouth and stuff like that. That is so important, that birth. You know, we lie the person down and put the woman in stirrups. Most of the other places in the world, the way they give birth. I was in Vietnam. A woman would, she'd about ready to give birth, she'd walk out in the fields, squat, and the baby would come out more by gravity, and it's much easier.
What about these underwater births? You think those are good?
I think those help. Yeah, I do think those help.
Anything or just let them slide out, huh?
Yeah, and slide out and let nature do it. Let nature do it. Don't really push one direction versus another direction. Nature's doing it for a certain way.
Well, what are some things that listeners can do in their everyday lives to get these blockages out of here, which you contend are really the main cause of the whole deal? Osteopaths are great, and I'm sure yoga, exercise. What kind of things can we do to open up all of these different blockages?
Well, first of all, you know, yoga is my favorite exercise. It's stretching is youth, okay? I think a lot of people, all of these joggers and stuff and all of those, they're going to have a lot of problems. Okay, number one. Number two, don't go for a checkup. Okay?
Doctors are worse than germs.
That's right. Yeah. As kids, we only went when we were ill. Now you go for a checkup, and they're going to put a tube someplace, they're going to do a test something, and they're going to find something on you and then do a procedure. That's the way they make the money. If you got no symptoms, don't go for a checkup. Okay? You eat what God grows and not what man makes. You look at the French. The French eat 5,000 calories at dinner. They smoke like fiends. They drink wine like fiends, and they're thin as rails. Because one of the reasons is the food is fresh. Another reason is they eat it, they dine over 2 or 3 hours. They enjoy it. They take their time. Okay? Very important part of life.
Chewing the food is really critical.
Really critical. We're slurping our food in nowadays. You know, chew it. Take an hour or two for your meal. Dine. Okay? Digestion, I tell people, chew 40 times to really start to mulch up in the mouth. And the pHs in the mouth are very different than the stomach. Do it the way it's supposed to and enjoy it.
It's
That's
really key, isn't it?
Thing. Yes, it is.
People eat in the car these days.
Yeah. And, you know, I like it so much. It's not just the food we eat. Linda McCartney dies of breast cancer at the age of 50, being a vegetarian all her life.
Sure.
My father dies at 96, even having cheap gala wine and diet imitation margarine most of his life. But he really enjoyed things. He didn't stress about things. Okay? He lived just that day, took care of what he needed to do, then relaxed the night over there and never stressed about tomorrow, wasn't worried about yesterday. That was his life.
I've always often connected breast cancer to ladies who were kind of wound up a bit tight and worried. Do you suppose that's true?
That's part of it. Really, what I'm finding a lot of it, too, is women today, a lot of them want to be more men, okay? They don't like breastfeeding. The breasts are made to feed, okay? No, they want to do that. You give them a bottle. No. The women that like to be women don't get breast cancer. I also don't like hormonal therapy. What they're doing to the women nowadays is horrible. With all of this birth control and then controlling the menopause and all of that, that's setting up things. When they put these medicines to control menopause and hot flashes, and then they gave them Fosamax to build their bones, they skyrocketed breast cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Stay away from the doctors. They will do things like that to you. And a woman should be a woman.
So you don't like the bioidentical, any of this hormone messing with any of the hormones?
That's a new fad.
Yeah.
I like a great physician I once met said, you know, when something new comes out, he waits 5 years before he gives it to his dog. Then he'll give it to his dog 5 years before he gives it to a human.
Here's an email. Anthony from Boston wants to know, what about systemic enzymes for the scars? Does Dr. Beagleson any experience with using systemic enzymes for scars?
Well, proteolytic enzymes will clear up a lot of the debris at the base of the scar. What happens is the scar is like a dam, and things can't get through. The proteolytic enzymes will help clean some of that stuff up.
Like Dr. Nick Gonzalez of New York, he recommends like these pancreatic guys from the pigs. Do you like those?
I don't have a problem at all. Nick Gonzalez is a really good man, and he knows his stuff. And when you got a guy that knows his enzymes and his chemistries like Nick, then he'll come at you in his own way, and he's correct.
Yeah, he's an enzyme guy, isn't he, boy?
Yes, he is, and his work on cancer with the enzymes is very, very fascinating.
This is an email from Sharon. If one can't successfully give birth naturally after having a C-section,
Well, it, you know, it depends. You realize it's the muscular contraction. If there's big scars on that, you're not getting good muscular contraction. You're probably going to have another C-section. But I've seen a number of women, if those contractions are good and even and continue, do your best not to do it with a C-section. But that scar may cause... There's a way that uterus contracts, and that scar may be interrupting that, and that may be the problem.
But what if you did the whole neurotherapy and the osteopathic work before?
That makes it easier because the pelvis will be open. It'll be a lot easier for the uterus to push the kid down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but again, if that scar itself didn't heal well, if there was a problem with infection, and that's a loose scar, you don't want that uterus rupturing. So I'd say it's 50-50 depending on the case. To me, if I was a woman, it was my wife had a C-section,
mm-hmm.
we would try the next one naturally, but if there was a problem, we'd watch it like a hawk. Mm-hmm. And you could start to tell if that something happened to that uterus and the scar in there, and then you may have to do an emergency C-section.
How would you know?
You'd know by the baby breathing. The uterus is not contracting in its right way, and mm-hmm. it actually may start to tear on stuff, but there'd be things you'd feel, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a woman, so I don't completely identify with the way the woman feels.
Mm-hmm. You could do probably something with a midwife in a birthing room and have somebody nearby if you had to.
That's the way I would do it, personally.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the hospital only as the last resort, because mm-hmm. that kid coming out with the bright lights and the way they do it, it's pretty darn barbaric.
Mm-hmm. What do you advise to your ladies as far as natural birth control?
Well, certainly make the man use a condom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I tell the women. What happened in the 60s is the women all of a sudden wanted all the freedom, so the men ran the show and they said, great, we'll give you the IUDs, we'll give you birth control because I ain't going to wear a condom. I tell my women now, if the guy ain't going to wear a condom, get rid of him, he doesn't respect you enough, 50 others will line up around a block and plead with you. So.
And I guess there's also natural ways of looking at the mucus and doing the whole in rhythm with the period as well.
And the diaphragm. Use the diaphragm. That'll use the rhythm method, the diaphragm method. You're better off than that. Because if the woman takes those birth controls, look at these women today. Have you ever seen women that weigh so much weight after 50 years old? That's from the birth control. That's from what they're doing to women. It's horrendous.
I know that you were right in the middle and at the beginning of the whole homeopathic bringing it out, and you had a big part in Arizona in the early 80s. And homeopathics do work. How do you really find in your work to get the right dose and the right homeopathic medicine? If you get the right one, it'll work.
Years of experience. Number one, classical homeopathy is pretty weak nowadays, but a good classical homeopath can help you through. But it was very interesting. We had I had an actual handwritten diary of Samuel Hahnemann's,
mm-hmm.
and we translated that diary. And at the end of his career, he was using, instead of one dose homeopathy, he was using multiple remedies at low dose.
Hmm.
And he found that much, much better. And the one-dose one came about 25 years ago from George Vatoukos from Greece. I think that's a little too weak. I use homeopathic sarcodes, but they are as pieces of animal tissue. If I take the lung tissue from the cow fetus, even though it's diluted 6X, it's still enough lung tissue in there, protein in there. If I inject that to you, your lung capacity will improve over the next 24, 48 hours.
Oh, you actually injected homeopathic?
Yeah. I do a lot of that. I use the animal tissue I inject, and I use isopathic remedies are too difficult to describe, but mainly it's the animal tissue. If you ran a 4-minute mile today, I can work on your heart, your bones, your muscles, and your lungs, and you'd run a 350 mile tomorrow just by improving your efficiency.
A friend of mine said that he saw Dietrich Klinghart not long ago, and he said, wow, he sure... Actually, it was the other fellow who we had on the show up in the Northwest. I'm going to space out his name. Anyway, he's a doctor, Jonathan Wright, and he said, boy, he sure looked young, and I bet he's using those stem cells. You use stem cells as well.
Yes, I do. Jonathan does. I've been using them. The first one I used, I had a gal that was almost like a Christopher Reeve and she's out riding a bike right now.
My goodness.
I'm using animal tissue of stem cells, which is very interesting. The FDA, I can get them into this country. They come from France.
Mm-hmm.
And the French made it that you can actually drink it so it gets through the mucous membranes, and the FDA left it in as a food stuff.
Hmm.
And I like stem cells. I think it's the future. We can regenerate tissue. If you came in with an ulcer, bleeding ulcer, I guarantee in 24 hours you wouldn't have the ulcer anymore, and you have normal tissue grown in there from the stem cells.
Really?
Yes.
And so most anyone could use them and could benefit from them?
Yes, but you have to know how to use them. For example, if you've had surgery in your belly and I need to do some of that, first I have to release the scar
mm-hmm.
so the stem cells can get to that area.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. So I prep the people for it, okay, the wheatharia, and I am getting no negativity, and I'm finding in cancer, it's very good in cancer, because cancer is what I call anti-life. There's no chi in it. Stem cells have new life in it, and we're getting some interesting results. And people are getting chemo, but they're improving so much, the doctors are stunned by we're giving them the
fascinating. So the thing is, you want to get the whole body with the osteopath and the neural therapy happening before you do the stem cells.
Yes, everything. And this is one of the things, you know, you ask people want to know where to go here and where to go there. One of the things that I talk about is every case is a runaway freight train. First you got to catch it, then you got to control it, then you got to bring it back to the station. Now, I mentioned the people, if they got, you know, tough cases, if we saw them for a week or two, we can catch it, control it, and start to bring it back to the station. Now I can talk to their doctor easily, and they can help really bring it back to the station. But most osteopaths that are classical don't do neurotherapy. Most neurotherapists don't work with osteopaths.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the combination of the two, so a lot of times, like I said, we can control it, and then I tell you, hey, Don Jones in your area, you may be 50 miles away, but the guy knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and folks then could come out maybe and visit you and stay a week or so and get started.
I'd stay a week or two, depending on the case.
Mm-hmm.
Lyme disease people were getting, within 1 week, 80% turnaround.
Now, what do you mean when you say that? Because that's such a huge issue these days, Lyme disease. Well, so you're suggesting that, how would you get a turnaround on a Lyme disease patient?
Well, number one, it's not. If you look at the stuff, it's not the germ that's causing it.
Okay.
The germ is growing in the weakened body. Almost every Lyme disease case is working on what I call on 5 out of 8 cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
Most commonly, you'll see a woman come in Lyme disease 2005 was diagnosed. But in 2003, she had a hysterectomy and they took her ovaries out, the big surgery there. That weakened the system, the inflammation trap. As soon as I treat the surgery, bam, she's up to 7 cylinders, the Lyme disease, quote, disappears. The first thing you do is look where did man damage the body. 80% of the time, within a couple years of the diagnosis, you'll see something happen to him surgically or something like that.
Hmm.
Okay, and you hit those areas, and that changes. It's not the germ. It's the working on the physical body. To me, the physical body is an 8-cylinder car created by God. Magnificent.
So you clear up this terrain, get a juice in, and then the body's going to deal with any buggies in there.
Right. The buggies will go back to normal. See, it's we call when you got a scar, you got a stagnant pond. In the stagnant pond, the algae grow. We call it stagnation and dysbiosis. We break the stagnation, and those algae will go back to normal germs.
Here's an email from Kira for Dr. Beagleson. Can you ask doctor what kind of blockage can cause secondary amenorrhea, amenorrhea, and if they want to give me a hormone therapy?
Oh, well, what type of, number one, hormone therapy, yeah, they want to do it to the women all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Was it C-sections? There were tubes tied, and why are they given hormone therapy? Okay, how old is the woman? Are they given hormone therapy because she's getting hot flashes? Well, let her have a hot flash. That's what nature did it. If you start to suppress the hot flash, you're going to start to mess up other things with the woman.
Mm-hmm.
So why? What's the story there? A scar, or I wouldn't do hormone therapy. No way, no how.
You just wouldn't do it.
I would. It makes no sense on that. The body. Nature does nothing in vain. If you have scars and injuries, the body will compensate incredibly well. Once we start to change it over there, it really messes it up.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors are more harmful than germs. get the body working the best of all instead of using chemicals to try to stabilize it.
Are there a lot of docs like yourself that are using this live blood analysis the way you do?
No. Huh. There is something called live cell analysis out there, frankly, which is a bastardization of what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn it in a weekend. They talk about fat particles and chylomicrons. No. Most of those are made up. The guy that made them up was a fellow named Bradford, who's in jail now for doing that.
Oh.
My work is based on pleomorphism, the germ changing size and shape depending on the terrain. That work goes back a minimum of 50 years that I'm doing. And it took me two germ physicians side by side for 2 years of apprenticeship to learn it.
Really?
Anyone that says live cell analysis and they're talking about fat particles, chylomicrons, get out of there. These people are con men. They don't know the story.
Mm-hmm. And you were in Europe to learn this?
I was fortunate enough, when I wrote the Arizona Homeopathic Law, I allowed things to happen in Arizona, and I opened up all sorts of therapies from around the world, and I heard about a German physician that was working on an Indian reservation they called the Great Spirit. And I said, come on down here, I want to see what you do. And my son had acute mononucleosis. On Monday morning, he was supposed to go to school on Saturday up in Oregon. On Monday, he had 104 temperature. His myotest was positive. His white blood count was 19,000. His liver tests were very abnormal. This German guy came down, looked at my son's blood, looked at his tonsils, and said, I'm going to fix you up. He then injects into the tonsils, then takes some blood out of my son, mixes it up with some remedies, injects it back into his butt, and tells my wife he can go to school now. Next morning, he flooded out, his tonsils were 70% peak, he's got no temperature. Next day, his tonsils were 100% normal. Friday, his blood tests show 6,300 white count. The mono test was negative. His liver enzymes are normal, and he flies off to school on Saturday. That's acute mononucleosis he beat within a week. I called that German scientist. I said, Dr. Plogue, you come down and work with me. That year, he had over 30 Hollywood people coming in and out of the office that he was treating, making them look beautiful, etc. And I learned massive amounts from him. And I was with him for a year. The Berlin Wall came down. He leaves, and I hear a German girl comes in, and she said, I heard you're looking for a microscopist, and she now starts to teach me the next step. And she taught me a lot of this hologram in the blood.
That's fine.
She opened that door up.
The hologram. That's what you're really looking at, is the hologram, huh?
Yeah, I'm looking at the whole package. I put the pleomorphic thing, but the hologram tells you so much, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the pictures, there's the pictures on there of the babies in the blood. You give me a woman that's pregnant, I'll show you the babies in the blood.
Yeah, if you scroll down, folks, you'll see a tooth implant, that picture, and then also a woman having a period, you can see a picture of that. It's crazy. And then broken femur, 3-month fetus, is that the one, and 10-week fetus?
Yep, and those look exactly like a 3 and a 10-week fetus. And the broken femur, that was the single most interesting picture I took, because that broken femur was taken a month before the woman injured herself.
You're kidding.
That was a wild picture. I called
her
up.
Now, what is that about?
I called her up. She was 80 years old. I said, Marlene, did you ever break a leg or bone? No. But what was going on in her life at the time? She was independent, but her kids wanted to take and live with, have her live with them, and she didn't want to. So this is almost emotionally.
Yeah, you probably
had to do something.
You picked it up on some spiritual level, right? Of something.
As we were talking about, she didn't want to do it. So if she sent something like this, and she can break something, that would change a lot of what's going to go on the next month or two with her kids. She was very against with the kids, so this thing came up. It's the only thing I can think of, but that was a month before. A month after this, her son calls up. She says, you're not going to believe what happened to my mother this morning. She fell on the ice, and guess what?
Wow, that's wild.
That was the single wildest picture I ever got.
That's the real holographic thing, right? That's the whole idea.
Every thought that you have is there. If you're angry, mm-hmm. it's there. If you're angry for a week, it's different. If you're a genetically angry person, it's different still.
Mm. Here's a couple quick emails we'll get before we let you go. I know you have to go to work, from Dora. What about Hashimoto's, this whole thyroid issue? What are your opinions on that? She wants to know, because it's such a big issue.
I've had good success with that. Almost all thyroid issues come from the mouth.
Really?
What's gone on in the mouth, what type of infections in the mouth, how much teeth have been removed in the mouth, why were the teeth removed, what's going on in the sinuses, and the thyroid will drain a lot of stuff from that mouth. So there's a lot of times you're cleaning up the mouth, and that thyroid will start to normalize back out. Hashimoto's, usually I got a couple cases. One had an operation in her palate, right up in there. They did something, and it was a bad operation. And there was another one, I think, that had one of the wisdom teeth, but it was they had to go two or three times, bad infection. Anytime they have to go two or three times into it, it's a problem. And the thyroid, everything from the throat comes with the lymphatics, from the head, lymphatics, the thyroid. Thyroid's a soft tissue, soaks up a lot of that, and that's what goes on.
Mario wants to know how chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's a big thing, really prolific around our culture, how does it tie in with the blockages?
Well, that's what it is. When, if you got almost every chronic fatigue has had surgeries, okay, and that surgery is knocking off a cylinder here and a cylinder there, okay? If you treat that, find out when the chronic fatigue started. Oh, it started in 2007. Oh, in 2006, yeah, I broke my ankle. Bam, bam. You see that, you start to treat that, and you'll see a change. What it is the body's using a lot of its energy on inflammation to heal it. Like I said, eight's on the car, but two or three cylinders are working on the trapped inflammation. That gives you fatigue.
You know, just the name of your book, Doctors Are More Harmful Than Germs, and can tell that you're kind of a politically feisty guy. Do you get any heat from the federales on the work that you do?
Well, yes. Not as much this time, but when I wrote the Arizona Homeopathic Medical Practice Act, I got a lot of heat from the feds. And two things happened, and I need to go soon, but I'll tell you the story of what the feds are about. In 1985, I got a random, I was one of 2% of physicians picked for a random Medicare audit. They randomly picked 28 cases out of my 5,000 files. They all involved chelation therapy, and I never chelated a day in my life, but I had a guy that worked with me. Those were his 28 cases.
Really?
So that was not a random pick. They had to use the codes. There were 22 members of ACAM, the Chelation Society, that got hit with the same random audit. Well, after 6 months of the audit, they said, your codes don't fit our procedures. Mm-hmm. Why don't you code it this way? I coded it exactly the way they told me. 3 years later, they're having grand jury hearings on fraudulent coding. At the end of 3 years of grand juries, they indict me on 3,500 counts of Medicare fraud. I mean, on 117 counts of Medicare fraud, totaling $3,500.
Really?
They threatened me with 20 years in jail. Okay, it would have cost me $1 million, essentially, to defend it. I end up with a plea bargain of $145, 4 years probation, and told, get out of the United States and never practice again, and we won't put you in jail.
And what year was this?
That was in 1994.
So $150 and you get out of the country?
Yes.
And so what'd you do?
I went to Mexico for 7 years.
I'll be darned.
Now today I work as an assistant under another doctor. Okay, so I don't have a license in this country. I probably had the lowest conviction in United States history. At the same time, I was indicted on $3,500. Senator Bill Frist, his family opened up the Healthcare Corporation of America, and they got a Medicare misdemeanor for $1.7 billion.
Wow.
And they signed a check for it.
Wow.
One indictment.
So now the only thing you don't do is write scripts, but it doesn't matter because you work with another doc and
right. They
can't do anything to you.
Right, right. Right now, I'm sort of in a gray area. There's no licensing agency over me to say I can't do this, I can't do that. And I have two doctors and I have the nurse that gives the shots, and she works with these couple doctors.
What?
I just consult and make my recommendations.
So you really figured out a way how to work within the system, haven't you?
Well, I had to. Otherwise, I have to make a living. I never had a patient complaint. I only had state board complaints, and they only had federal complaints against me.
Well, we know many cases of those around the country. And what did you do in Mexico for 7 years?
That's where actually what I was having in hell. I had a cancer clinic, but I had down there everyone that was given up. No one goes to Mexico unless you've been given up and you panicked. Well, that I was allowed to in Mexico, and Baja is a free trade zone. I can get remedies from all over the world.
Oh, I see.
So So I learned a lot. We got, really honestly, 100% turnaround of prostate cancer. Stages 1, 2, 3 of breast cancer, we were getting 100% turnaround. Probably 50% on stage 4. But I learned a lot because I had what I almost call a human guinea pig population.
Sure.
And the amount that I learned there was great, but 7 years in Mexico was enough for a lifetime.
Yeah, it's pretty rough down there. Well, Doc, you're a fun guy and just very generous with your time, and we appreciate it. It is drbeglesen, BIGELSEN.com. Folks can go there and get more information. And thanks for doing the work, and we'll keep in touch, and I'll probably